our first assignment. There were many, many writing exercises, but our first serious writing assignment was to write a 3,000-word short story, minimum 3,000-word short story in 3 days. Well, holy cow.
Oh, God.
3 days. I did not think this was possible,
yeah.
But I did it.
Oh, wow.
And everybody else in the class did it, too.
Yeah.
So we turned it in thinking, huh, showed you, right? Well, we handed in the assignment. And then she turns around and she says, your next assignment is to write a 3,000-word short story overnight. I thought I was going to die.
It's Joanna from JCB Art Studio. I've shortened my name. I gotta have a short name somewhere. I mean, with a name like Vanderflux, something's gotta be a little shorter and a little easier to spell. So, welcome to JCB Art Studio. As I said, my name is Joanna. I'm the author of Dealer's Child and The Unraveling. And kicking off, I didn't tell her this, I didn't tell this to our author, season 3. I have multi-published author Marcel Dubé on the podcast, and I'm really excited to chat with her today. Marcel is the author of numerous mystery novels and short stories. You go on her website, her bibliography, you just scroll, and it's like, wow. Marcel is also on the executive of the Sisters in Crime, Chapter West. And Marcel grew up in Montreal, and after trying a few provinces, she set roots in the Yukon. Now that's cold. Oh, for 35 years. And she now lives in Alberta, which she says is much like the Yukon and all the ways that count. Now, today we will be talking about Marcel's latest novel, The Wronged Woman. Marcel, welcome. I'm excited to chat with you.
Oh, thank you, Joanna. You're making me feel so welcome.
Good, good. So you are incredibly busy, and I'm just wondering, how are you doing? How do you, like, manage your time? You're so busy.
I don't think I do manage my time. I think I just run from one emergency to another, try to deal with it.
Well, you look very calm and collective, you know.
I know, that's my secret power. Underneath the water, my feet are paddling like crazy.
Oh. So your book, The Wronged Woman, you had my attention from the first page. And just from the very first page of that book. And I was wondering, before we get into it, what is the best writing advice you've received?
I would have to say that the best advice I ever got was to get out of my own way, to get out of my own head, to just write.
Okay.
A little story.
Yeah, yeah.
A few years back, I took a 2-week masterclass in writing. And our first assignment, there were many, many writing exercises, but our first serious writing assignment was to write a 3,000-word short story, minimum 3,000-word short story in 3 days. Well, holy cow.
Oh, God.
3 days. I did not think this was possible, yeah. But I did it.
Wow.
And everybody else in the class did it too.
Yeah.
So we turned it in thinking, showed you, right? Well, we handed in the assignment. And then she turns around and she says, your next assignment is to write a 3,000-word short story overnight. I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
But I did it.
Oh,
and
wow.
So did everybody else.
Oh, wow.
And then we turned it in. I thought, surely to God, she's not going to ask us to do one in 2 hours. No. She said we had to write a 10,000-word short story in 3 days.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And again, did it. The only way we could do it was to just sit our butts down and write and not, you know, angst about it and think, oh, is this the right word? Is this the right inflection? No. You just get the story down. And because we did it that way, we didn't have a chance to angst over the words. We didn't have a chance to get in our own way. We had no time.
Okay.
Because we had all those writing exercises to do. We had to attend lectures.
Yeah.
And we had to read everything that everybody else wrote in the class. So writing of the stories had to fit in between all that. So that exercise was to prove to us that we could have a writing career while working full time.
Oh, okay.
And to be honest, one of my favorite short stories came out of that exercise, the 10,000-word one.
Really?
Yeah, because I was tired and I was grumpy. And I was just, she wants a story. I'm going to give her a story. And I did. And I think it was a very good story.
So, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, you know, you get out of your own way and it's amazing what depths you'll plumb.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk briefly. Okay. You brought up short stories and in a conference call with you and other members of Sisters in Crime about an upcoming anthology. And I know my story with a whole bunch of other stories were submitted blind, so no one knew whose story was whose. And I remember when my story came up, it was golden because I like writing novels. I do. I like writing the novels. I'm not so much the short story. And you had said, this is a novel trying to be a short story. And it was like light bulb. I thought, okay, that's my fingerprint, right? Like it was, might as well have been my fingerprint, right? Because I thought that's exactly it. And you had mentioned how there's a lot of backstory in the beginning of this short story. And I just thought, that's right. You know, and you sit there and you think, why did I put in all that backstory? Right? This is a short story.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how someone else can point something out. And you're just like, why didn't I see that? You know? So do you find that is a common error with short stories? Just too much backstory? And I'm really curious.
Well, I do find or that, there's no setting at all. So you feel like everything is happening in a white box, right?
Oh,
you don't know where you are. But the whole backstory at the front end of the story, I am so guilty of that. But I've now recognized that this is my pattern.
Okay.
So I'll write it. I'll write the whole backstory and then I'll get to the story itself. And then when I go back and read through it, I'll go, oh yeah, there it is. So and then I'll chop it off.
Okay.
And if there are bits and pieces that are needed, then I'll thread it into the story.
Gotcha.
Somebody called it walking up to the porch, right?
Yeah.
The story is the house.
Yeah.
So you're on the sidewalk, you're walking up to the porch, you're climbing up the stairs, you're on the porch, you're crossing the porch, then you get to the house.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
once you recognize it in yourself, you can address it. You know, I mean, sometimes you need it. You need to write that to get it out so that the story becomes clearer in your own head.
Right.
And that's okay. There's no point in beating yourself up about it. You know, most of us do some form of it.
Yeah.
So you recognize it, you look for it when you're in revision, and then you deal with it.
Well, it was great, you know, and I thought, oh my God, that's so true, you know, and I hold on to that because I thought that was great feedback. I really do, right?
Yeah, but it's usually a novelist's problem. Yeah. Because I'm like you. I'm more of a novelist than a short story writer. And with a novel, you've got so much time, you know. You still have to be reasonable and you have to be careful. You don't want to bore the poor reader to tears. But you've got time to thread in the information that they're going to need because they've settled in. So they're coming with you for the ride, you know. Yeah. But in a short story, that's a different art form.
Oh, yeah.
It's really different.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so The Wronged Woman, can you tell our listeners what it is about and where it places in the series, in your series?
pardon me. The Wronged Woman is the sixth Mendenhall mystery. The series starts with the shoeless kid about, I don't know, 10 years ago, something like that. And it may well be the last of the series. I haven't quite decided yet, but it feels like I've answered the story questions.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Well, you had me cheering. You definitely had me cheering for the heroine, Kate Williams. Now she's chief of police and you made it personal. It's interesting what a reader will connect with, you know, because Kate, she's chief of police. She's got so much going on. And in the back of her mind, she's thinking about how all these people are coming for a wedding, right? And she keeps, you know, it's her sister's wedding, isn't it?
No, her niece's wedding.
Her niece's wedding, yeah. And it's funny because in the back of her mind, she's like, can't they elope? You know, and it's, you weave that in different times of the narrative. She's just like, can't they elope? You know, and I loved that because I call it my MTM moment. And for those who didn't grow up on Mary Tyler Moore, that's what I call it, my MTM moment, where you decide you're going to hold a party or you're going to invite people over. And it seems like such a good idea. And then like 24 hours before the event, you're just like, oh my God, why did I do this? Is there enough food? You know, like just
What was I thinking?
Yeah. So that I immediately, that one little thing, I was like, oh man, I like this lady. So I was wondering, any situations similar to poor Kate?
Oh, well, I'm sure we've all had situations like that. I mean, I'm a natural introvert, right? Yeah. So too many people around and I start to get anxious.
Yeah.
And then my daughter decided to get married a few years back. And oh my God, she invited everybody came. Thank God it was like the wedding in The Wronged Woman. It was a backyard wedding with a tent and everything. So I had some experience to go by, but there were so many people and I felt like my smile was just fixed to my face and my cheeks hurt. And I was going, is it ever going to end? Is it ever going to end? No, don't tell my daughter this. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that all introverts feel the same way. No matter how much you love the person or what a joyful occasion it is, it's all those people.
Yeah.
And weddings are stressful. People go a little crazy at a wedding. Yeah, and Kate knows this, right? I mean, the woman's in her 50s. She's got experience. She knows that something is going to go wrong because something always goes wrong. And she does so desperately wish they had just eloped.
I know. Okay, with my oldest, she's been with her partner for over 10 years and the subject has come up and my husband keeps saying to her, how about you go to Maui? We'll pay for you to go to Maui, a all-inclusive. How about you go to Maui? You know, he's like, thought, you're telling her daughter to go get married on another island in another country.
Yeah. I have a pair of friends who did it the right way. They just invited everybody over to their place for a potluck. And when we got there, they informed us that they had gotten married that morning.
Okay.
So they didn't want anybody to bring gifts. They just wanted a big party.
Yeah.
Which is what they had. And it was joyful because there was no pre-stress involved. Yeah. We just showed up for the party with some food and everybody celebrated.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it. Yeah.
They had been living together for well over 10 years at the time. So it wasn't the flush of youth, right? The joy of, oh, we want to get married.
Yeah. So in the Mendenhall mystery series, I love the titles. Like you said, it started with the Shoeless Kid, the Tuxedoed Man, the Weeping Woman, the Untethered Woman, the Forsaken Man, and now the Wronged Woman. Okay, so going back, what made you want Kate to be the chief of police? Because A, that got a fist pump from me. I've worked for police complaints. I used to work for police complaints. And all the 12 municipal police departments, there wasn't one female chief of police. And I was thinking about this when I was thinking about our talk today. And I know I had spoken with one inspector, and she said she could make it if she stuck around long enough. She goes, maybe. She goes, but I'm retiring, you know. So I was wondering, what made you want to have Kate be the chief of police? And if you could tell us a little bit about Kate.
Well, it's interesting that you said that about your female inspector, because that's what Kate was thinking when she applied for the job. Was, this is a really good way to ease into retirement. You know, she'd been a big city police officer for so long, and she was really tired of the internal politics and the big city crime. She was ready for a change. She wanted a simpler life. She wanted a place where, you know, there wouldn't be as much crime. Boy, was she wrong.
Yeah.
She arrived in Mendenhall to find a police detachment full of resentful police officers, because they all wanted their deputy chief to become chief.
Yeah.
Because the old chief died, and he had been the DC had been acting chief, and everybody assumed he would become the chief. Well, he didn't.
Okay.
Kate was hired instead. So, that's what she had to face when she first got there.
I believe it. And you know what, Marcel? I think I just went full on straight into the next question, and I didn't ask you to tell us a little bit about the Wronged Woman.
Well, the Wronged Woman, as you know, features Kate dealing with the onslaught of two families who have never met each other before, getting together, not in either place, not in Montreal, not in Toronto, but in Mendenhall, where the wedding's taking place.
Yeah.
And Kate is she's girding herself, you know, she's just, okay, I can do this. I can do this. And everybody is laughing at her. Her boyfriend's laughing at her. Her deputy chief is laughing at her. Everybody knows how she's feeling.
Yeah.
And, but you know, she's dealing, she's accepted the fact this is happening. Might as well just, and then somebody discovers a dead body in a canola field.
Yeah.
And so, all of a sudden, she's not only dealing with the stress of the wedding, the stress of two families interacting and not always well, she's also dealing with trying to figure out what happened to this poor young woman.
Yeah.
And then she realizes that one of her constables is involved in the crime.
Yeah.
So that's the premise for the book.
Cool. Okay. So leading off from that. Another personal connection I had with your novel is I remember we were visiting my sister Susan in Alberta and driving through Alberta, and the very first time I saw a canola field, and I have never seen, it's something, you know, that expanse of yellow.
I know. It just brings me so much joy.
Yeah. But I was in a car and I didn't realize that ripe, and I'm sure everyone in Alberta are going to be, you know, shaking their heads when I say this. I didn't realize that ripe canola had a smell, because when they're, it has a smell, doesn't it?
Apparently. I've never smelled it because I've never been that close to canola field.
Okay.
I only ever saw it driving by. Oh, lovely, lovely. You know. But I did research, you know, just to know what I was talking about. And apparently it does.
Yeah, because
smells ripe when it's ripe.
Because they're like covering their faces, aren't, like, their nose. Okay. And yeah. That was cool. That was very cool. So I think this series, and correct me if I'm wrong, I was thinking it's more like a police procedural. Okay. And I thought the scene in the morgue was excellent. It was respectful.
Thank you.
Yeah. It was, you know, you read some books where they talk about, you know, I'm not talking about a morgue scene, but I've read a book where it's like gash, slash, stab, you know, pummel, kick. And it's like, okay, it was just way too much, right? Like, yeah. Just way too much. And the scene in the morgue, it's like, it wasn't gruesome. It wasn't gruesome for the sake of being gruesome or shocking. And what I liked was how the medical examiner moved around the body, and she was so respectful of the body. And I was wondering, when I was reading that, I was wondering about your research for that scene.
Yeah. I mean, most of the research that I've done involves Google, of course, yeah. And talking to anybody who talked to me.
Yeah.
But I've never been in a morgue. I mean, I would love to go to a morgue. I think I would, you know, I mean, you get these ideas in your head, who knows, you know, what reality really is. But I've done a lot of research online, but I also read Mary Roach's Stiff. Have you ever read that one?
No.
She analyzes or studies how we have treated cadavers throughout history.
Okay.
It's fascinating, and it's also really interesting. She's a very good writer. Yeah. And what I came out of that book with was how respectful we treat our corpses now. You know, how morgue attendants and even when we donate our organs, what they do with the corpses after. It's all done with such respect, you know, for the person who was there. So that, and late last year, I took an online course on forensic anthropology.
Oh, wow.
You know, the people they call when they find a body in the forest and they want to know, you know, is it male, is it female, that kind of stuff. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Really fascinating. Okay, so I'm a little ghoulish.
That's okay.
You know, but I figure that's not bad for a crime writer. So that too was very interesting, how they treat the bodies and how even the cadaver farm, you know, where they study how a body decomposes over time under certain conditions. That too, you know, like they really appreciate people's donations of their body to science. And I had never realized before that if I donate my body to science, I might end up in a cadaver farm.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be cool? That would be kind of cool.
I'm a little on the fence about that.
Anyhow, so yeah, I may be a little weird, but
that's okay.
Those are the attitudes that I've tried to reflect.
Yeah,
and I like Dr. Kajawa. I think she's a pretty cool character.
She is. And like I said, she was so respectful. And it was nice to read. Like, it was nice to read, because I think we've all read the books where, you know, it's it's gore for the sake of gore, and you're just like, oh, you don't need this, you know, and you're right.
No, I don't like reading those books, so I certainly am not going to write them.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying you're thinking this may be the last Mendenhall mystery. And I've realized I haven't discussed this series and a series arc with anyone on the podcast. So I'm just getting it. I'm just getting into it. I'm working on book three, and I'm just starting the rough draft of another series. So what I'm wondering with you, did you plan a series arc? Because, you know, did you plan, okay, I'm going to have it be 6 books or 7 books? Because again, this morning, I was thinking about this when I was driving. Sue Grafton has, what is it? How many letters are there in the alphabet? Right? Like
26.
26, right? And so did you plan a certain number, or is it something that just kind of came to you as you're working through each book, thinking, okay, this, I think I may be coming near the end? Like, I'm curious how did you get to where you're at?
Well, not through planning, I'll tell you that. I wrote The Shoeless Kid. It never once occurred to me that it was going to be the first book in the series.
Okay.
I just wrote the story that was in me.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a shoe on a road somewhere, and the image just stayed with me and bugged me till I finally, okay, I'll write you. And I wrote the story. And I thought that was it. And then people started saying, well, what happens now? What's next? And I started thinking, and I liked the characters. So, I'll write another one. So, 6 books later. No, there was no planning. I had no idea what the story arc was. Each story is discrete and stands alone. But if you read from the beginning to the last book, you see the growth in the characters, the development of the relationships, things happen to some of the characters, and there's a growing trust and loyalty, and I quite like these characters. But there were two storylines in particular that started from the beginning and that just kind of threaded through the whole series until I reached the 6th book, and they both resolved.
Oh, neat.
And that's why I'm thinking, well, I guess this is it. And I guess this is it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But I could be wrong. Who knows? Something else may occur to me.
Well, I remember hearing an author on another podcast, and she said she had finished a series, and she goes, but she has learned, do not kill the character off, because you never know.
You never know, yeah.
Right? There may be.
Yeah, and what if I brought Kate back in another series, you know, like with somebody else as the main character? Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm not going to live long enough to write all the stories I want to write.
Yeah.
I'll just say that. But the boys in the basement are always working, you know. So who knows what they're going to come up with next?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting with each book, because I know with this third one, you know, my heroine gets in a little bit of trouble, and it's weird. Like, you have this happen where she gets in a little bit of trouble, and then she's has to make a decision. And as I'm working through it, it's interesting how then, just working through the story, I realize this is the decision she has to make, and it involves her career, you know? And that is, I find, so rewarding as an author, right?
Yeah. Well, for me, I Kate is in charge, right? She's always in charge. But she's also a very collaborative person. So she's not one to throw her weight around and to always say, thou shalt do this because I'm your boss and I said so.
Yeah.
She listens to her people, and they often have a really good idea of how to proceed next. And so they all work together, and that's how it works. But she, in the end, she's the boss. The decisions are on her shoulders. And but what I like about her process is that everything is organic.
Yeah.
So that when she finally reaches a decision, she's taken everything into account, and she carries through with it. So it's like a logical procession of what should happen next.
That's cool. Okay.
The boys in the basement, they get all the credit.
Okay, so you started the series with the Shoeless Kid. Now it's received, I want to know about the recognition and it has received, because I remember seeing a Facebook post that it received an award or it received recognition from the Yukon. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. No awards, but I was approached by the Department of Tourism in the Yukon, and they were setting up a Yukon book club, which featured Yukon books like nonfiction, fiction, like old fiction, Jack London, that kind of thing. So they have about 17 books in there now. And what they do is they connect the books to places in the Yukon and provide information about those places. So it's a travel Yukon initiative. So of course their focus is tourism, but they also feature different books. Like, and for the authors who are alive, they provide a little. They record you.
Okay.
So I had my poor daughter sitting there with my phone filming me while I'm trying to answer these questions. And so if you look on the Travel Yukon site under the Yukon Book Club, you'll find my Shoeless Kid being featured. Not because it's set in the Yukon, but because it was written in the Yukon and inspired by the Yukon. That shoe I mentioned on the highway.
Yeah,
that's where I saw it, on the Carcross Road, on the way to Carcross, and just kept thinking, how does somebody lose just one shoe? How does that happen?
Yeah.
So that started the whole series.
Well, we have friends in the Yukon, and my spouse is being up to Keno. So that's really cool. And I didn't realize about the Yukon, now whether it's the spring or the summer, but its landscape is beautiful. Like, I always thought it was covered under snow all the time.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. I remember seeing photos of it in a book, and I just thought, wow, this is beautiful. This is really beautiful. Like, because I always thought BC was like, the beautiful, you know, it's on our license plate, beautiful British Columbia, right?
And it is. It is beautiful.
But when I saw those photos of the spring,
I have been to just about every, no, I have been. I have been to every province in the country, and I've lived in many of them.
Yeah.
And I've been to the Northwest Territories. That's before they separated into Nunavut.
Yeah.
And the Northwest Territories, and bar none, the Yukon holds my heart. It's the most beautiful place I've ever lived.
Okay.
I love it there. I would be there today. I would never have left.
Really?
The only reason I left is because Alberta is where they grow the grandchildren.
Okay.
that just, I'm sorry, Yukon.
Yeah.
You have my heart, but my bigger heart is with the grandson. So,
yeah. Okay.
But all I know is that now I'm a tourist attraction.
Aww.
Because I'm on the Travel Yukon site.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Now, when you were writing, hold on here. When you were writing, I know with what I'm doing now, I started with a what if. So I had my notepad out and I'm thinking of my story and I'm like, what if Coco, my character, does this, and then this happens. And what if, you know, and I note it's all like what ifs, right? And I was wondering, what was your first what if moment with regards to the wronged woman and your character, Kate?
To be honest, I don't know that there was an exact moment, a what if moment. There usually is. For all my books and short stories, almost all start with a what if moment. Like I will see something or I'll read something that'll go, I wonder what would happen if.
Yeah.
You know, so, but something always triggers it. It's not that I sit down and go, all right, now, what if I did this? Yeah. That happens when I hit like the dirty middle and I'm going, what is going to happen next? I have no idea. So then I brainstorm. Well, what if this happened? Or what if she did this? Or what if somebody showed up? And, you know, that's when I do the brainstorming.
Yeah.
But, I told you about Shoeless and the shoe on the highway and Tuxedoed Man. There were emergency preparedness exercises taking place in the Yukon. And I was thinking, wonder what would happen if there was actually a real dead body in one of those exercises. That became the Tuxedoed Man. So just about every novel and short story. And for Kate, I think that was just in the middle of, it was wedding season, right? You were hearing about all these weddings and I was going, yeah, Kate would hate that. Wonder what would happen.
And I like how you referred to the middle as the dirty middle. I'm going to remember that.
Right? Yeah, because I always feel like, oh my God, now what? Yeah. Turn my hair out, you know, because the boys in the middle haven't caught up to me yet.
Yeah. And sometimes I find I'll start, like I don't usually write in sequence, but I know when I'm getting, let's say, to about 2/3 or 3/4, I then start going backwards. Like I'll usually know about the end. Like I'll have, let's say, about 2/3 of I'll call it front end. Okay. And then I'll know what the climatic moment is. And I may have even written the climatic moment. And then sometimes what I find is, and I've said this to Carol Land, work backwards. Like you have your climatic moment. What led up to that? And I literally work backwards until the two just kind of
wow.
Yes.
Never ever work like that.
Yeah. No rhyme or reason.
I start at the beginning and I write through until I get to the end. And if I'm stuck somewhere, well that's it. I'm stuck and I have to wait until I get unstuck.
Okay.
So if I could write, you know, further along, but I have no idea what's happening further along.
Yeah.
I'm a very linear thinker.
Okay. No,
I have other strengths. That's not one of them.
Nothing wrong with that. Okay. So then in The Wronged Woman, did you have any character revelations or anything? Like I had one last night where, you know, you're supposed to be falling asleep. And then the next thing you know, you're like, what happens to this, you know, and your brain starts going.
Wait, I have to write that down.
So have you had any sort of like character revelations or anything that makes you sit back in your chair or stay up at night and think, oh, geez, right? With The Wronged Woman?
I did a lot. Mostly had to do with the characters that I thought I knew really well, you know, after 5 completed books. And then Kate did or said something that I went, I didn't expect you to do that. And a couple of other characters did the same thing. Like they reacted in a way that I went, well, that wasn't really pleasant. I'm not really happy that you did that. And then, you know, you think it's a wedding. Everybody's a little crazy with the wedding. So the stress levels are so high that it doesn't always bring out the best in people.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But I also, I thought I knew who the bad guy was.
Yeah.
And about 2/3 of the way through, I realized, oh, my God, it's not him. it's somebody else.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, for me, that's the best part of writing is to realize something that if I couldn't guess, the reader won't be able to guess either. So at least I hope not.
Yeah. That's good. That's really good. Okay. So my favorite question is coming up. Okay. So Chief of Police, Kate Williams, comes up to you in a pub. It could be in the Yukon. It can be in Alberta. Okay. So you're in a pub. Chief of Police Kate Williams comes up to you. What do you think she'd say to you?
Well, I think that if Kate Williams ends up in a pub, it's because she's after somebody. Okay. And if she shows up and starts talking to me, it's probably that she's finally caught up to me and she's about to arrest me.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I love that answer because every author has given me something I've never anticipated. Okay. That is cool. Okay. Very good.
She's pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh. So what's next, Marcel? What's next? What are you looking at doing next?
Well, I have a couple of short stories that I have to finish. And while I'm doing that, I'm doing research for my next LA Chronicle mystery. I've got two done, and I'm working on the third one. The LA Chronicles are alternate history / science fiction / mystery books. Yeah. And they're very hard for me to write because I am not a natural researcher. I am not. And this involves a lot of research. But I really like the story. I really like the characters. And I think that the two books that I've already got done are some of the finest work I've done. So
wow.
I hope I can keep it up. They take me a lot longer to write than my other books.
No, I understand that. Definitely. Yeah. So Marcel, is there anything you'd like to add? Anything at all?
Wow, we've ranged all over the place. I can't think of a single thing you haven't touched on.
Okay, well, it has been really enjoyable, you know, just to sit down and chat with you. Because, I know how busy you are. And it's like, we got to talk about her book, you know, because I feel for Kate.
Oh, so, she'll get over it.
Okay, Marcel. Well, you stay healthy. Okay.
I'm trying.
And I will be chatting with you soon.
Yeah, you take care, Joanna. Thanks very much. This has been fun.
Good.